Welcome, fellow seekers. My name is Nathan, and this is the Law of One and Spiritual Concepts podcast, where I share my interpretations of the Law of One and other related topics. Today, we'll be doing a little bit of a different episode, where we'll be discussing the topic of the Law of One and its relationship to a thriving humanity with my new friend, Victor. Victor and I met a few months back at one of my Law of One meetup groups in Denver. He's been a great addition to the group with his insightful knowledge on the material, and was one who sparked the topic of today's discussion. With that, welcome, Victor, and could you please give us a brief overview of your relationship with the Law of One?
How are you doing, Nathan? It's good to be here. I was raised by a very spiritual woman, my mom, and so I was into a lot of spiritual things from a young age because of her in that way. At some point during college was the first time that I was actually introduced to the Law of One by her. And it's been through that and David Wilcock primarily that I first learned about it. When I first discovered the Law of One, I was in college at Texas A&M University. I remember walking around campus with a soft smile on my face, looking at everyone living their busy lives and just thinking, I have knowledge of our experience that is so important, so different than all of you. I know we are all one, and I know my purpose in this life. I am meant to share the Law of One. I finally had this bit of knowledge that put me ahead of my peers, and regardless of what grades they were making or whatever class they were taking, I knew something that superseded their ideas. I think I placed so much importance on this idea that I stopped caring about class and university knowledge, and I kept diving deeper instead into esoteric and alternative knowledge structures. It started with aliens, UFOs, star beings, alternative history, ancient civilizations, ancient spiritual teachings, psychic abilities, pretty much anything David Wilcock would touch, I thought was gold.
Yeah. You got a similar background from that standpoint.
I lost my initial glow, and with it went my soft smile. Things had gotten a little more complex. I still believed the Law of One, but the core of the message seemed muddled. I had so much other knowledge now. I knew my way around both the esoteric knowledge somewhat and scientific knowledge somewhat. I'm a bioenvironmental scientist. I wasn't the most dedicated student in either esoteric or scientific knowledge necessarily, but I always believed that I was absorbing a lot, and my brain seemed to accommodate that idea. I mixed and matched ideas from these different seas of knowledge and shared, sometimes through force, these ideas onto my fellow humans. It was my duty, I felt, that I knew what was best for them. I think I came across as a know-it-all, and that somewhat obviously didn't know much about the world or myself based on my energy and my place in the world. As the world continued to turn, I noticed more negative, the injustice, the pain in the world, what was wrong in the world in my eyes was becoming more obvious. What was wrong with me was becoming more obvious too, but I didn't quite see that as quickly. I knew that I cared about others. I believe now that I didn't quite know how to convey that I cared, or that I didn't express what I cared because I didn't know how to do it healthily. Instead, I treated myself as a martyr of a sort, walking catalyst that would speak the truth to everyone. And this was the greatest service I could provide. Regardless of the consequences to my own personal reputation, I felt it was more important to stay steady with my point of view. That honoring knowledge was most important. Effectively, I equated myself to that knowledge. I defended it when necessary, viciously, without hesitation. I had ability to circumvent true caring in those moments, masking my anger with careful words. But the intent behind the careful words was absolute destruction of the other's ideas. I wanted them to be scattered to the wind and to stand victorious as the wake of my better ideas took hold. It very rarely ever went this way. It has taken me years to see more clearly myself and my situation that I had created. I was missing some fundamental teachings or understandings here. I put knowledge before love and equated knowledge alone to my value and my person. Years of pain, isolation, including self-isolation, self-harm, knowing myself, has taught me something about this. I want to love and be loved by others more than I want to be right. It was as if a powerful filter had been growing over my eyes. I could see that my way of being wasn't serving me or others in a positive way. My angry thoughts, my divisive ideas, my need to be a walking catalyst, my need to be right, were all preventing me from feeling this love for myself and others in the moment. I did not accept the world or the people as they are. And so I feel like that's a pretty good encapsulation of me recognizing over time that even though I had Law of One knowledge, I wasn't living it necessarily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been my more recent path, is that I want to really live it. And that's what I'm working towards.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. I know a little bit of a vulnerable topic with some of that, so appreciate you there.
Yeah.
I feel like we've all kind of gone through some of those transitions when you start studying the Law of One material. It's a unique thing. It's so exciting, and the metaphysics and all the different sides to it kind of are a little flashy at first, right? But then to get to the actual living it and practicing what Ra's teachings actually are in there are a whole nother level. So
yeah, like the first level is excitement.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh, you actually have to do this.
Work. Yeah. Yeah. The hard part, right?
Yeah, the hard part.
But okay, so from there, we'll dive into today's topic. And I thought it'd be important to start by defining what it means to thrive. So to me, that thriving is prosper, flourishing, or to grow and develop vigorously. And this is not only just to do well, but this is also to prosper beyond well. That's at least my standpoint on it.
Yeah, I would say thriving to me is it's another level beyond what we even know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a level of prospering that we can't really comprehend. At least that's how I look at it.
Yeah. So looking at what Ra presents in the Law of One material, I think from a high level, everyone would agree that this gives us concepts and philosophy of what literally lead to a thriving humanity or society. From seeing and understanding that we are all one, and the concepts of healing, love, forgiveness, and gratitude are the starting points. But of course, the veil of forgetting is what complicates things and makes it more difficult to see the oneness in all things and truly love and heal. But our goal today is to try to weed through some of the complications and look at some ways to get to a thriving humanity from what Ra presented. I'd emphasize that these are only our opinions, that we do not have all the answers, and we're only attempting to strive towards the goal of a thriving humanity with our thoughts on this topic. So Victor, I'll open it up to you, and if you'd like to discuss, I know you have a fruitful analogy that might help shed some light on this topic.
Yeah, thank you. I did want to add real quick that another aspect that makes it so complicated in this world is free will itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just adds such a level of complexity where we have all this choice.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, with that, I'll get started with what I have as a presentation for the homecoming in Louisville, Kentucky next month. It's similar to actually some of your introduction there. I ask here, what is the destiny of this planet? What is the destiny of the people of the Earth? I believe this ultimately was the reason for the Ra contact. They desired a planet that provided a fair template toward a thriving and united humanity. A planet that provides fertile ground for each of us to awaken in our own way and serve the whole. We as seekers seek unity, purpose, a reason why we are going through this. Ra appears to want us, as we wade through this life, to seek in the direction of service to others, to seek and polarize in the direction of this unity, if that is what we desire. I would say that even more so, they seem to want us to flourish, to prosper beyond our current ability or reality. I will say it, I desire this. I desire to serve the one infinite creator in service to others. I want the earth to be a place that provides us this opportunity for each of us to uniquely bloom and the human race and the planet to flourish. So I've created this analogy of a tree to human consciousness. And it's not that unique of a idea. I think that there's the tree of life and all of these other ideas that are centered around this. But I think that the analogy provides a lot of insight for us if we, as much as we want to engage with it. And so this was the start of that analogy. Where I use this broad and expansive analogy of plant growth to describe and expand on our united human condition and web of consciousness that we are all part of, regardless of the direction of our individual thoughts. I want a way to fairly communicate across the tree, to engage with thought outside my usual branches. A key for Law of One enthusiasts or followers is likely found within the concept of unity, recognition that it can't be any other way from here, and to recognize and accept the place that each of these thoughts hold in our collective tree. The analogy of this tree of human consciousness was pretty simple at first, but with each layer of complexity further analogizing this connection between ideas, thoughts, beliefs, and overall human consciousness to the framework of a tree, I have found the resulting complexity to be quite beautiful and insightful on working through the apparent need to evolve our consciousness in this time. Most of our discussions, conversations, debates, quarrels in this everyday life are at the surface of human consciousness. These thoughts associated with the surface level can be thought of as the leaves of our tree. They are the surface level expression of our thoughts. I will use examples of what has been said out loud, as this gives a pretty good representation of what the tree would look like. I say this because what is said out loud is maybe our best approximation on describing what we as a collective are thinking most of the time. The truest version of the tree may be closer to thought than specifically what is said out loud. We may find ourselves thinking or believing something. We may manifest a new leaf or contribute to one by giving energy to these thoughts. Someone else may be thinking or believing something slightly different. It may take some imagination or perspective to recognize that you're still on the same branch of thought. Someone else may actually be on a whole different branch that we don't easily identify with. This describes the difficulty to expand our thoughts far enough to recognize that we are on the same tree. Some branches can be very sure of themselves, so strong in their knowing that that person or that idea is really on a different tree entirely, something not meant for this tree. It is supposed to be the tree of consciousness after all. We should weed out the bad ideas, right? Keeping them from being part of our tree. I see these as infinitely limited branches. They can go round and round, expanding and pruning themselves, but they will never be a whole tree on their own. So I ask, how many limited branches am I a part of? How many are you? How many subconscious limiting thoughts or beliefs are you giving energy to? Sometimes it's difficult to see or understand what is holding us back. So however limiting, these branches, which could be analogous to the subconscious thoughts or belief systems or ideologies that are, so however limiting these are, they are still part of the tree at this time. And leaves or branches may fall off the tree at times or be removed by force, sometimes of our own doing, choice. Or we may observe rot on the tree, something that has been ignored, forgotten maybe, and still wounds or hurts us, and we feel it, and we may not know that something needs to be done, or we may know that something needs to be done, but disagree on how to heal it. So these are just all different ideas on what or different analogies that are based off of the original analogy of the tree being human consciousness. Another analogy is the roots are the representation of the unconscious. All the surface thoughts and subconscious thoughts are fed by these common roots. For so long, I wanted to effectively uncover, to expose these roots, to understand more clearly why we are the way we are, to understand what ties us together here. I can see at times being aggressive in my root uncovering was actually damaging to myself and others. So I seek balance in that process. I think that that kind of gives the outline of the analogy. And you can kind of see other areas that it can go.
Yeah, I really like the way you go with that analogy, because it's similar to what Ra talks about with the roots of the tree of mind, basically. But his are more going into the unconscious mind standpoint. I feel like with your analogy there, you kind of look through a little more details of what else is going on with the conscious mind, like you said, relating the leaves and everything to that model. So I feel like that's a really good exercise to look at in meditation too, just to process. I feel like you can keep tying things together.
Right.
Onto that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm trying to show the different layers of, you know, we may express something out here on the surface of the leaves. But, you know, that may be because of a ideology or belief that we are holding on to for other reasons. You know, and it's all connected. You know, it's like that. I think that that's what's amazing for me about it, is that it seemingly isn't, but by kind of using the analogy, you can go back to the unity easier.
Right.
That's the idea, at least.
Exactly. So I think we'll transition a little bit now to looking into some more of the specifics on a thriving humanity. And to me, I think the big question comes from our other selves, if they really want to work through these enormous issues we face in society today. The amount of division we see between ourselves and others seem to be only be getting worse. So if we really want resolution and restitution, we need to be able to look at our personal and collective shadows and accept responsibility for our actions in order to understand ourselves and where the others are coming from. This is no easy task, but if we stop feeling sorry for ourselves and learn to grow and accept each other as the creator, whole and perfect, I think that would be a huge step in the right direction. You have any additional thoughts on at least that part of it? But I know it's a tough question to ask.
I think that that's fair to say that's moving in the right direction. I think people misunderstand each other constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably leads to a lot of arguments.
Yeah. And a key point to that also is to always honor and respect the other self's free will, which we brought up previously. And this is a difficult task in itself too, kind of what you had gone through. And I've had a similar experience at times where you want to share this great knowledge and what you think can fix or solve issues of humanity. But in a sense, if you're not respecting their free will, you can't force them on other people. And likely they're not going to accept it very well either. So it's,
you can't trim a branch that everyone is on.
Yeah, there you go. Right along with your analogy. Yeah, so I feel it's kind of important too with coming through some of these concepts that the planting of the seed method usually seems to work best, where you can bring up certain things, particularly when it comes to the law of one and spirituality, on how we can make things better and let that seed grow. Because then when you start getting into complex metaphysics and spirituality topics, if people aren't actually interested in hearing that, it's just going to, you know, go in one ear right out the other, or they're not going to be coming back to hear anything else really at that point. So,
right. I like the idea of a seed also, just because it's like saying that what the little bit that you did give them has more to unpack within it. You know?
Exactly.
And it's up to them to nourish that, let it grow if they want it.
Mm-hmm. But it's their free will to choose to do that, and
that's their free
will. How they, yeah, from there. So I think with that kind of as the baseline, then I have the next question of how do we make the biggest impact? And I'll start by answering it there. But I believe the most important thing we can do is to raise the collective awareness and consciousness levels of humanity. I think that is the ultimate starting point to understanding each other, working towards oneness, just basically everything that we believe we need to see to be on the service to others' path, and what we would need to see to go into a positive fourth density I feel like I've narrowed it down to that is the beginning steps that I feel need to happen in order to get to, yeah, thriving humanity from there.
Right.
Do you think there's any other bigger impacts or?
Yeah, I think that if I understand what you're saying, the individual, the individual's place in this, ability to kind of change their own energy or perspective is the most powerful thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So from the individual standpoint and then leading to the collective standpoint, I feel like it goes hand in hand, right? So once you start raising your own awareness and consciousness, you also have an impact on the collective from there. So it is
Yes.
really the biggest pathway to get to the collective raising of consciousness awareness is by starting and working on yourself and going through your own personal journey, I guess.
I am 100% with you now. Yes.
Yeah. And I think once the awareness has been raised a little bit, we'll be able to see through a lot of the manipulation and control we face today and be able to see the truth through that, what is best for all. And assuming we're not all working towards the service to others path, of course, that's kind of the baseline. So obviously there's other forces working against that. But I think with that elevated consciousness and awareness, we can then have those tough conversations and begin to work through the issues with compassion and reason. So it's not always just an argument. We're kind of walk a mile in someone else's shoes, understand where they're coming from, and be able to come to some sort of agreement to at least be able to better each other and work together from there.
Yeah. And just on that same note, it feels like, there has to be a level of not detachment, but lack of attachment to that you're going to be affecting those other people, or that, that your idea is going to get across, or that they're going to understand you. Yeah.
Yeah, so you know what you need to do, but you're not attached to a specific outcome with how it exactly needs to play out. So
Right.
you know the steps, but what the end goal is, I mean, at least the end goal for most of us is to go to the service to others, positive fourth density, but how exactly that gets done is, but I feel like the attachment to outcome issue that yeah that you want to avoid from there.
Right.
Yeah, so I think when I first started looking into some of that, I'm like, some of this does definitely sound like a pipe dream, right? Like it seems so far from where we're at, but I do believe it's possible. And I think it all starts kind of what we alluded to earlier is working on our individual selves and going through the personal work, being your authentic self, following the disciplines of the personality that Ra talks about, the know yourself, accept yourself, become the creator. And going down these paths, I feel like will at least start leading to that end goal. And one of the most important things, also is, of course, the meditation practice. I think that the Confederation continually brings up in basically any channeling work you read by them. I think that's the greatest way to really elevate your consciousness level and to see your shadows and work with your unconscious mind, from that standpoint too.
Yeah, meditation. Yeah, everyone knows.
Yeah,
It's like, but they don't all do it, so.
I think some of it kind of comes down to starting by asking some of those questions, the big questions of who am I? What am I doing here? Where did I come from? Those kind of things to get your seeking process started. And once humanity starts asking those questions, I feel like that just opens a gateway to basically this whole spiritual world and everything that Ra presents in the raw material, to guide you along that journey. But you need to first ask those questions, it seems like, to even begin.
I don't even know what my life would be like if
Exactly.
I didn't. At this point.
It becomes the most frustrating yet fascinating combination of things, I feel like, once you start going down that route, because yeah, what I was interested back at the beginning of my spiritual awakening is, totally different to what it is today, but you just don't know. And the route just keeps going. And like Ra says on some of that, I mean, in a not his exact phrase, but everything happens for a reason to you in your life experiences that you're learning what you need to know to, yeah, to progress.
Right.
So I th the other topic I was thinking of was relating to, I believe it was Joe Dispenza talks about the mind-heart coherence and how they've scientifically proven that when people are in the mind-heart coherence state and radiating that loving awareness, they have an impact on the people around them. So I was giving the example in the apartment building I'm in now that, when you're in this loving state, you don't realize, but you're also affecting your neighbors and the people around you. So just by being in that positive, loving mindset and mood, you also are impacting others. So you're radiating that love. And Ra also kind of talks about that then in 1730. And I just thought this was interesting because it gives scientific evidence to what Ra talks about as a way of being service to others. So I wanted to look at that 1730 a little bit closer here. I'll start by just reading that quote here. So it is, with Don asking, what is the best way to be of service to others? Ross says, the best way to be of service to others is the constant attempt to seek to share the love of the Creator as it is known to the inner self. This involves self-knowledge and the ability to open the self to the other self without hesitation. This involves, shall we say, radiating that which is the essence or the heart of the mind-body-spirit complex. And the second part to Ra's quote is speaking in the intention of your question. The best way for each seeker in third density to be of service to others is unique to that mind-body-spirit complex. This means that the mind-body-spirit complex must then seek within itself the intelligence of its own discernment as the way it may best serve other selves. This will be different for each. There is no best. There is no generalization. Nothing is known. So I think that kind of segues also into the second part of what Ross says there, having to do with once you've done a sufficient amount of your own inner work, learning disciplines of the personality and understanding yourself a little better, you can then discover within your own unique way to be of service and to aid humanity from there. But without doing that inner work, it seems rather difficult to actually be able to discover what your unique purpose is to be of service. So I think that would be a key thing to contributing to then the thriving humanity is by discovering that, but of course comes with doing your inner work first.
Or suggesting that other people also do their work so
Yeah.
that you get the whole humanity thriving.
Right.
Right.
And I think that kind of comes back to asking some of those questions, planting the seeds. So once people start on their own journey, right, then they kind of start going through that same path or see, look, your life has been totally turned around. You are now going in a positive direction, radiating this love of the Creator. And I think that alone could have a huge impact on humanity.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
So I kind of wanted to transition now to looking at just briefly the concept of religion, New Age, all those things versus the Law of One. Because it seems like if we're kind of sticking to the concept of attempting to raise the collective awareness and consciousness levels, that the spiritual topic is going to come up against religion and everything else too. And I think it's just, without getting too deep into it, I guess I'll say, I think that on the spiritual path that's outlined in the Law of One, it's not necessarily to give up your religion in order to learn and to thrive on what Ra has talked about. It's an aid, really. In my opinion, a much more important aid, I think, to it as well, but it doesn't require you to leave religion behind. And I think Carla was a perfect example of that. She was a devout Christian and really continued her work throughout this channeling.
And even to some in the spiritual community, holding on to maybe Christianity would be viewed as li limiting or something, which is, probably somewhere I have something skewed there, where I see a lot of aspects of religion as limiting. But I think that there, yeah, it's like there's also recognition that there's value there. You don't need to give it up, like you're saying. Value's there. So.
And that's what I think too. And then in raising your consciousness and kind of looking looking back at religion through this elevated level of consciousness too, I kind of feel like some of those things will fall away, like you're saying, the controlling aspects of it, the what may be seen as a little more negative side to things will really end up falling away. Because to the truth seeker, I feel a lot of this is inevitable when you're putting in the work, you're doing the inner work, and just keep saying it, but the raising of the consciousness, I think that alone would really change some people's perspective on it, not to give it up, but to relinquish any limiting thoughts related to it.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And I think that the complicated part will just be coming down to the concept too of the understanding that more than anything, really, that we're all one is a more difficult
Kind
concept
of
to get across.
final denominator.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, we've mentioned Christianity a few times now where it seems most are looking for a savior in Jesus Christ and others, where really I feel what the raw material and others are presenting to you is that we are all one. Jesus Christ is within us. We have the ability to therefore make these decisions to be that second coming of Christ. It's just the ball's in our court, I guess, for lack of a better word, to do more with it and to then understand that concept of oneness. Not waiting on someone else to do something.
I totally agree with the concept that Jesus is within us, or that we are God in some way, and as long as you don't get big head about
Yeah, the egotistical
it.
side of it, right?
But I think that if people can get to that point, then yeah, we're on the right path.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of important just to bring up because I could see that very well becoming a hot topic at times too. Just, I mean, anytime you really bring religion into much. But I think that kind of transitions. Then I wanted to look at more of the technology side, technological society aspect of the world we live in today. And I think that in order to have a thriving humanity or society, that we must move away from this society focused on technology and technological advancements and balance this with our spiritual metaphysical aspects. And by including spirituality and metaphysics as a focus point of society, I also think this would drastically aid our technological advancements. But we would also do this through the lens of spirituality, so with a best for all kind of mentality behind those technological advancements. And I think this was kind of outlined nicely by Nikola Tesla, where he said, "The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than all the previous centuries of its existence." So, yeah, what do you think?
I love Nikola Tesla. I just had to say that. Yeah, in many ways, Nikola Tesla was one of the big shocking things that I couldn't get over, that kind of sparked a lot of my spiritual awakening, kind of stuff. And so I always had this fascination with technology, also that I wanted to know about alien technology. But getting to the idea of that we can't create a kind of technology that will be useful in the realm of spirituality, or really in a thriving humanity kind of sense. It won't be useful until we are there, consciously, in a higher consciousness, to create the technology. And so I think I agree again with with what you're saying, is that we need to kind of back off on the technology front, kind of get there spiritually, and once we're there, then technology can emerge that is of that consciousness.
Right, exactly. It kind of goes hand in hand. And it seemed even Rob mentioned, I think it's 34:13, right? That technology television offer the sum effect of distraction and sleep to our humanity currently. And that to me just kind of emphasizes the concept of the sinkhole of indifference, where when we keep going through the spiritual, or sorry, the technological advancement, we're keeping people, I wouldn't say dumbed down, but stuck in the sinkhole of indifference, basically, where you're constantly looking for the next thrill, the next who's posting on whatever, Instagram, Facebook, anything like that, but you're not actually doing anything about it, or you're not actually getting out or breaking away from that technology to learn more about yourself and some of these spiritual concepts, where it's clearly becoming a hindrance, it seems, at least from my perspective.
As long as the focal point for the technology is going to be monetary, it's pretty unlikely that we're going to be spiritually served by it.
Well said. Yeah, I agree. So I think, at least going along the technological lines, I thought it was good to look back at some of the previous civilizations that Ra discusses, and to be able to learn from some of those, and some of the mistakes that were made and or successes. And I think the first one that I pulled up then had to do with Atlantis. And this is where Ra indicated that this society was the ones that called upon the Confederation for aid. And the Confederation was the one who then basically gave them their technological aid, advancements with healing crystals and pyramids. And then after that phase, though, the Atlanteans then began to use this technology for power and other things than healing. I believe it even mentioned governmental structures. So I would assume that would be more geared towards control and controlling the society and
Topped out. Yeah.
exactly from that standpoint. So with that, they perverted the power and teachings that were given, and they talk about creating life forms as well, which seemed to be clearly a big no-no and when messing with consciousness there. But and instead of healing their own mind body spirit complexes and learning more about themselves to advance further, and this ultimately took them down the negative service to self path and led to the wars and ultimately the destruction of the civilization. And I also think that was mirrored with the Meldek outline that Ra gave, that it basically ended up destroying itself through warfare, also with the advanced technological information that they had, and used it without care for their planet, ultimately led to their demise. So those are, I guess, the to me, what almost seems like potentially the path that we're currently on now, or what could go that way by our society being focused on the technological advancement. It seems to go hand in hand with going the service to self path, and like kind of like you were saying too, just corporation standpoint, everything else, it's all for profit, it's all for individual elite gain. Whereas some of the more positive spiritual oriented civilizations like Lemuria on the continent of Mu, where they were a primitive group, but were very greatly spiritually advanced and appeared to have a thriving society that ended up washing beneath the ocean, not due to their fault of their own. But I kind of thought it was interesting to look at what Ra mentions. They are the Indians or Native Americans of today, and kind of looking at the way that their civilization is, because it being much more of a hunter-gatherer society, each person has their own role in that society and all contributing to the whole and to the thriving nature of each individual in the group. And I kind of feel like that seems to be passed down from the Mu civilization. And I think there's a lot to be learned from at least their mentality or the way they look at life and the important side of things, let alone their more advanced spiritual beliefs, everything too.
So to me, I see it as like there just needs to be this balance of technology and spirituality, and there's going to be advantages to having some technology as part of our society, and I don't think there's a reason to throw that out completely. You know, even though there can be these negative aspects of it, I think that we have to be conscious about what we choose to use and create, and that's and also look at it like, you know, Native Americans and possibly the Mu culture, you know, in many ways they chose not to advance technologically, and the universe got them. You know, and maybe they had evolved to a point of consciousness that they no longer needed the physical form. We don't really know. But I guess I don't think that was exactly what Ra described or something, but because they became part of our part of the earth, you know, right? So,
They migrated from, that continent to others to,
right.
continue.
Yeah, so it's always a balance of love and understanding, love and light. So I see technology as part of wisdom and light. So.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, at least from my perspective, that the takeaway is most important thing is to balance spirituality with the technological advancements. Because for a thriving humanity, at least based on some of these previous civilizations that we were looking at there, it seems that you need to have some sort of spiritual oneness belief and viewpoints, at least as a lens to use for this technology, so that it's being incorporated as a way to benefit all and for the betterment of the whole society, not just the few at the top or anything. So it's it's clearly a balancing act, it seems, and it's again another one of those easier said than done concepts. But I just think as the masses raise the consciousness, a lot of these truths will become more and more evident, and it'll be easier to make the right decisions, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah, so along those lines, I kind of was looking into also a little bit about the concept that Ra mentions in 1631, where it's easier to move a boulder in a positively oriented society working together than it is obviously working by yourself as the negative one trying to push that boulder up. So I think once we start coming together a little bit more as a society, we'll be able to push that boulder over, and what I'd said earlier kind of sounds like a pipe dream, might actually be able to become a reality in raising our consciousness and actually leading towards a positive, thriving humanity at the end of the day.
You know, this kind of takes me back to tree analogy real quick, because it reminds me of you know, we have so many different thoughts and ideas and coming from completely different spaces, and it's like we have difficulty getting on the same page as people, and this idea of, you know, a service to other society where people are more on the same page with each other. It's exciting because you're actually removing a boulder. You're actually doing something here. And whereas right now we're caught in this space where it doesn't feel like much is happening because there's this disconnection of energy, or like, you know, people aren't working together, or they're all working against each other. And so I'm really interested in what that really looks like for a service to other society to be working together and still honoring each other's individuality and of thought and of doing things. So.
So I know everything we just kind of talked about here, it's a daunting task, but at the end of the day, it's going to take all of us, or at least most of us, working together as one to really make any sort of change. Instead of waiting on Savior, we are the ones who have this power, and I feel this honor and responsibility to make this change and to move towards a thriving society that will ultimately lead to our social memory complex in a positive fourth density. And with that, I think you had a few things to tie back together, your analogy of the tree, to kind of tie it all in.
Yeah, so it ties into kind of the end of my presentation here, which basically I ask how can we as individuals contribute to the health and help cultivate a healthy tree? How do we accept and love the areas of the tree that do not conform to our version of a healthy tree? The analogy of pruning or cultivation of the tree seems accurate and healthily applicable, but what does that actually look like? To do that in the now. So the only thing that really makes sense to me is that we are here to cultivate our own thoughts, and we are the resulting expression of that cultivation. So we are we put out the energy that we create out of ourselves. One thing that I was kind of struggling on was reconciling the correctness of the idea of infinity, that that we can all have the right thought, or that we're all moving in the right direction no matter what. So I felt like some ideas must be of higher quality than others, that there must be an ideal tree. But in light of understanding a lot of what Ra has taught, learned with us, this is just an ideal that is created by us, and we live in this in we're living this imperfect life, and our energy and thoughts impact the tree accordingly. So it's kind of like we got to be careful about what we choose to think, and what thoughts we entertain, kind of in a way. What we put our energy into. A couple other ideas along with the tree analogy. Without deep wounds, we would not learn to heal. Without the dying of a branch, a thought, a branch of thought, another would not be able to emerge. And this idea that it is the process that is perfect, not the individual tree or the individual part of the tree. We are the process even more than we are the tree. Maybe even we can love all parts of the tree because we understand that we aren't the tree at all, only the process. I have a little fun story here, or fun idea here. I find myself a renegade arborist of the conscious tree, sometimes a little overzealous in my attempts to manicure the tree. I may want to manicure it differently, imperfectly. Where I focus on the tree may just be different than where most see the need. I may see an unstable branch where others are witnessing the most beautiful blooms. I want the health of the tree to be better, but my clippers may come off threatening, or even more, my chainsaw. The circles of people who play and manicure the branch of thought surrounding the Law of One, or similar thoughts of unity, are people who are captivated by the perfection of the unity of all. We know it, we feel it, we want to share it, and we want to experience it. So it's like we're all aiming for this kind of societal level of communion, community. We want to work together to make this place better. And I find it interesting that we're all aiming for this unity, and paradoxically, all of this is experienced as individuals, and these are seemingly separate experiences that we're all having. So where does the individual fit into all this? What is our purpose? Are we all meant to bloom? Do we need to bloom in the same way? I think the obvious answer is no, but the choice is truly ours. And so I guess what it comes down to me for me is that we're deciding right now what our society, how we structure our society, at the same time that we're navigating this kind of spiritual thing. It's happening physically. Something's happening physically as well. And so we're trying to structure our societies in certain ways. And in some of those areas, we're censoring people and censoring ideas. That I think that while certain ideas can be poisonous, the idea of censoring is worse. We're getting to this point where we have to accept that not all these ideas are going to be from the highest place, and we have to let the more conscious ideas kind of flourish on their own.
And develop our own discernment, right? To determine what those ideas are for ourselves and not just allow that to be told to you and
Right. Yes, absolutely. Discovering what it is for yourself, or what ideas really resonate with you. And so I would say that that's has been my main concern probably the whole time while I was more of an overzealous arborist. and to today is that I'd say that's something that has carried over, is that I have a concern or care deeply about what happens here. And I think that overall where we got is with this talk is, it's important at the individual level that we raise our consciousness, and that's pretty much the primary thing that we can do for the whole.
And that we have an individual impact on the collective, right, from that standpoint. But yeah, it starts with the self from there. So awesome. Well, I think we'll wrap it up for now. I really appreciate you coming on, Victor. I hope we get to do this again sometime soon.
It was a pleasure being here.
And I think I'll end with just the final part of Ra's quote from 6512 for a little bit of positivity and inspiration on there. Where Ra says, "We may note at this point, while you ponder the possibility, probability, vortices, that although you have many, many items which cause the stress and thus offer seeking and service opportunities, there is always one container in that store of peace, love, light, and joy. This vortex may be very small, but to turn one's back upon it is to forget the infinite possibilities of the present moment. Could your planet polarize towards harmony in one fine, strong moment of inspiration? Yes, my friends, it is not probable, but it is ever possible."